Andrews lands in the open field. 30, 20, 10, 5. Touchdown! Oh, baby, this kid's pretty good.
You're listening to Bison Report Radio, presented by 24/7 Sports.
The Thunderdome, especially on homecoming, is just not something that you want to allow to get rocking, and they really, really did.
I don't think you could ask for any better. Maybe one more completion to go 11 for 11, but that kid was fun to watch.
Their wing spot is pretty loaded. I mean, you got Jared's going to play. I mean, he's as solid as it gets at the two spot.
Here's your host, publisher of Bison Report, Ross Uglum.
Hello, Bison fans, and welcome back to another edition of the Bison Report Radio Podcast. I am your host, Ross Uglum, publisher of the Bison Report for 24/7 Sports, and we have a jam-packed show for you guys today. Right away, I'm going to have Nate Zastrow live in the Bison Report studio to break down some Bison hoops, and then we'll bring on Trevor Gebhardt to talk about Jalen Bussey, Jabril Cox, and all the things that are going on with the Bison football team right now after their just absolutely monstrous victory over Western Illinois, racking up almost 700 yards of offense, but just a really, truly dominating performance for the Bison. We're going to hit the news right away. Got a little, a few injury updates at Coach Entz's press conference today. I believe they're going to move forward in the week as if Jabril Cox is not playing. I'm not convinced just because, you know, Coach said that there were no structural issues, that he won't play. But at the same time, this is a game where the Bison are going to be multiple touchdown favorites. And due to that fact, I could definitely see them deciding not to play Jabril Cox. A few other injury updates. Zach Mathis is actually running, and they're trying to maybe get him back into football shape. They have not closed the door on his season, and they also expect to get Tony Pierce back. Tony's had kind of what they're considering sort of a frustrating injury, something that's been bugging him. I believe it was a hamstring, but something that, you know, they felt wasn't going to be long-term, and I think has definitely been more long-term than they were first hoping. I mentioned Jalen Bussey in the open. Jalen's actually been named the Valley's Newcomer of the Week with his really strong rushing performance, ripping off two absolutely monster touchdowns on the first two carries of his career. I tell this story a lot, but I was told by an NDSU staffer last year that Jalen is the fastest guy he's ever evaluated on film. So just think about all the speedsters that have played for North Dakota State, and that'll kind of tell you, you know, what they're thinking right now about Jalen Bussey. Really, really impressive kid. All right, on to the basketball, and I'm going to bring on our guy, Nate Zastrow. Nate, how are you doing?
Doing good. Good to be back in Fargo this weekend. Got to watch a football game Saturday and taking the basketball game here on Monday afternoon. That was good to get a victory against kind of a pesky Cal Poly team today. They really hit some tough shots. I know NDSU was kind of a big favorite coming into this game, but definitely good to get a win. They found a way, used their experience, and it was good to get close the door at the end, make some big plays and good defensive stops.
So let's go back in time a little bit and talk about that game against Kansas State. It was a game that you haven't really broken down for us, but you were able to watch live, so I'd like to get some of your thoughts.
Yeah, I thought NDSU came out with a really good defensive game plan. I mean, it kind of showed in the stats. You knew they were going to pack it in the lane. You knew they were going to make Kansas State hit jump shots. Kansas State, known for their defense, they struggled scoring at times last year. I mean, they really did, and NDSU's game plan that first half was really good. I thought they rebounded well. They kept their big athletes off the glass. It would have been nice to hit some free throws in that first half. Going into halftime with a 6-8-point lead is different than a 1-point lead. It puts a little more pressure on Kansas State playing from behind, and shooters don't shoot as well playing from behind, I don't think. At least it was a little tougher for me knowing that, hey, we got to hit some shots to get back in this game. Carter Jada was a problem, and I think he's going to be a problem for a lot of Big 12 teams. When he gets going from the perimeter, it opens up lanes for him. And I think May Weems showed that he's a beast. He even showed a couple outside jump shots. But I thought for the most part, I mean, we competed for probably 31, 32 minutes, and I thought we did a great job. Would have been nice to hit some shots. You're not going to win at a Big 12 school shooting 28%, but I thought they competed well and proved that they're going to be a force at the mid-major level and hopefully can have the experience and talent to knock off a high major in the tournament this year.
Yeah, I think, you know, our colleague at CBS, John Rothstein, kind of the czar of college basketball, really thinks that Kansas State is underrated going into this season. And the number one reason he thinks that is because he really, really likes Cartier Jada. And I don't disagree. Was such a spark plug coming off the bench for that K-State crew that won the Big 12 last year and now is kind of the man. And you can tell that. I think there's a different swagger with him this season. Going to be interesting to see how everything plays out for the Cats. Obviously, you know, we have friends down there and hoping that they do well again this season. Mayville State was another this one was a counter. You know, it counted towards North Dakota State's record. But, of course, everybody knows Mayville State's not Division One, but the shooting woes continued. Not a particularly wonderful even finish. They scored 93 points, but were still only 8 of 23 from beyond the arc. This is a team with a bunch of guys that can shoot it. And so I think that's been kind of a difficult pill to swallow when you do have Vinny Shahid, Jared Samuelson on the team. Griesel's not a fantastic shooter, but Rocky Cruiser is, and frankly, Tyson Ward's been, at least from the corner, been a pretty good shooter his entire career. What did you see against Mayville State as far as shots just not going in? Were they contested? Were they missing open looks?
I think we're getting the looks that we want to get on offense. They're just not dropping. You know, I was worried about that Mayville State a little bit. I mean, yeah, they're a non-D1. They're 5-1. You knew they were going to compete. They're a North Dakota school. NDSU played Tuesday. They got to travel on Wednesday, and then they got to play again Thursday. I don't think the offense is going to be our worry this year. I think these past few games, defensively, Quatrician knows that they got a long ways to go defensively. I don't think you worry too much about the shooting three games in. Guys are going to come in and get shots, get some repetition and practice. But you do want to see them falling in the game because that is what makes NDSU tough to guard, as they have five guys on the floor that can all stretch it to three. I mean, it seems that way with a lot of teams, but they have the experience, and they showed last year in that tournament run that that those threes can be deadly. I mean, it got them back into games and helped them make a run in March.
Absolutely. Tyson Ward, you know, I actually made kind of a personal congratulations to him on the last podcast, but he goes over the 1,000-point barrier with a 21-5-4 mark. And Sam Griesel, and we'll talk about him in a second too, because it was not a particularly good performance today, but he had a double-double and looked really aggressive, and I thought looked aggressive against K-State as well. Richmond mentioned after the game that he really just wanted to see Sam continue to put it up, because as the way he put it was, he's not worried about failure, he's worried about the fear of failure. And Sam just kind of kept shooting. Eventually, I think some of those are gonna go down for Griesel.
Yeah, I agree, and Sam's a guy who, I mean, him and Rocky, I think, are a little bit of a wild card, because Vinny's gonna hit shots, Cam will hit shots, Jared has shot. I mean, he had some looks, especially today, that he just doesn't miss. I mean, he's gonna hit those shots. If Sam and Rocky can stretch that floor and knock down threes, even at a 30-35% clip, that's just gonna open up the lanes for those guards for more inside out looks, for all the guys to get some open looks.
Yeah, I'm convinced that down at this holiday tournament, we're going to do a little preview pod later for you guys in the week, but I'm convinced that this holiday tournament, they're going to put 85 or 88 on somebody, because they're going to have a game where they shoot at 45% from three, and all of a sudden, you know, your 5 from 20 is 9 from 20, or maybe even 11 from 20 if they really get hot, and you can add 15, 18 points to the end result there. Eventually, you know, the shooting woes relax a little bit, and 93-53 is exactly what you want to see against a non-D1. I mean, that's the goal. You want to blow those teams out. You want to get guys like Malik Harden-Hayes and Odell Wilson and Jackson Notek in the game. That's the purpose, ultimately, you know, of of those games. Let's get to today now. Cal Poly, North Dakota State got off to a good start. What did you see early going? They built, you know, I was making football puns because they had 28-21 lead, then they had 30-23 lead. How did they kind of establish that touchdown lead early in the game?
I thought they moved the ball really well on offense. I think at the beginning it was a little bit of more of a slow-paced game. They looked like they were trying to force-feed Tyson in the post a little bit, which kind of let the rest of their offense be a little stagnant. Once they got into like a little ball screen motion for Vinny, I think they were moving the ball a lot better, finding cutters. Sam and Tyree Edie had some nice cuts to the basket, nice finishes. But at the defensive end, at the end of that half, man, that they really struggled guarding the ball today, I think. And credit to Cal Poly. I mean, they came out with a lot of energy. But that 12-0 run before half, I mean, that was just a little lackadaisical on the ball. And, you know, Coach Richmond's going to show that to them in film. That 12-0 run turned into a 17-0 run going into the second half. And that was a little danger zone for NDSU there.
Yeah, I would imagine that the halftime conversation was not necessarily a pleasant one. I'm sure you've been on the losing end of a few of those, on the rougher end of a few of those. But then, like you mentioned, I mean, they jumped out in the second half. I don't know. I don't remember if the lead for Poly got to 8 or 9, but it was danger zone time. I mean, you're exactly right. And Vinny knocked in a monster three to cut it back to 5, and then NDSU started to kind of chip away. Vin with 21. And then this is kind of a conversation that's unique because I want to have it with you. You played point guard at North Dakota State. I don't necessarily need you to rank them, but kind of compare Vinny to some of the great point men that they've had. You played with Lawrence Alexander. You certainly know of Ben or saw some of Ben. And where does Vinny kind of fit in with those guys?
Yeah, I mean, I think Vinny being compared to those two guys, I mean, L.A. was a little taller than him. Woodside and him were
Ben wasn't.
Ben wasn't. But I think just the leadership part of it, I mean, he knows what the team needs in what situation. That he knows if he needs to get to the basket and get to the free throw line. He knows if he needs to hit a big shot. He knows if he needs to find an open shooter. You see him coaching guys on the floor, being a leader, and I think that's things that Woodside and L.A. did. I mean, he held his teammates accountable, and he knew that he needed to hold himself accountable to be able to do that, and I think Vinny does a great job of that, and he really made some plays down the stretch. I know he had that driving layup to kind of put them back up 7 with 50 seconds left, I think it was, and that kind of put the thing to bed and put any hope that Cal Poly had for coming back.
Yeah, there are guards in mid-major and low-major Division One that I watch Vinny, and I'm like, man, he could give this guy 35 if he really wanted to, but it's not always what the team needs. And I think ultimately the guy that does what the team needs is what you want, especially in a point guard, and that's Vinny. And I just love his bulldog mentality. That kid just is absolutely tough as nails, and the number one guy I think you want on your team when you're down 8 against a team you shouldn't be losing to in your own gym. And I thought that was a big time deal. Again, 5 of 20 from 3. I mean, if they go 9 of 20 from 3, which 45% is good. You know, that's good. But if they go 9 of 20 for 3, you're talking about a blowout. And I think that's kind of the difference, is this is a team that can go 9 of 20 for 3. And not that, I mean, you see Sam Griesel go 3 of 5 instead of 1 of 5, or Jared make any of the open looks that he never misses. And that's kind of, I think, where you're looking at that. Kind of a administrative thing, Cam Hunter held out of the first half. Coach Richmond described it as an academic issue. Obviously not ineligible, he wouldn't have played in the second half, but just kind of making, and this is something we've seen from David before, as far as Tyson Ward or Paul Miller sitting out a freaking Summit League tournament game. I mean, Coach Richmond has standards, and if you don't meet those standards, he's not afraid to sit you down. And I think sometimes that's a double-edged sword, but ultimately it creates a culture of accountability, which is sort of, in my opinion, a huge deal and a reason why North Dakota State has been so successful.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad that he holds guys accountable. It's something that you need in your program, or guys are going to do whatever they want. And it's disappointing to see Cam not be able to play in that first half, especially seeing how he played in the second half. I thought he responded really good to not playing in the first half, and I think his teammates were happy for him. But he needs to hold himself accountable, and hopefully he does that going forward, because he's a really, really key piece off that bench, and he can really provide some scoring. I mean, he had 13 in the second half, which really helped them, and he had a monster shot late in the game.
Right, and you know, you mentioned coming off the bench. That when Cam and Vinny play together, it's really dynamic. It does two things really for you. It increases the ability of guys that can get their own shot, because that's hard in college basketball to get your own shot. And both Cam and Vinny can legitimately do that. And you saw that on rim runs by both players, and you saw that on off the dribble jumpers by both players, and some catch and shoot jumpers. But what kind of made that possible was Coach Richmond's decision to go small. Even though they had some Finnish guy that was 6'10", causing all sorts of problems, Coach Richmond ended up playing Sam Griesel at center with Edie, Ward, Hunter, and Vinny. And I thought that was a really bold move, especially with how good the big man was playing for Pauly. But they wanted to be able to switch everything and stop so much dribble penetration, and also get to the rim constantly on offense, because, boy, Pauly ended up in the double bonus real quick.
Yeah, their dribble weave and their ball screen stuff, especially that dribble weave, I mean, they were switching in the first half, and all of a sudden a big guy was getting switched on, and they were getting to the basket at will. So I think it was a good move to go small. It didn't really stop from getting to the basket, because they still got to the basket.
Yeah, but they made everything. Yeah,
they were making some really, really tough shots and some tough finishes, which obviously you kind of live with. You play the percentages with that. Obviously you don't want them to go in, but if you hold teams to shooting those type of shots for the whole year, they're not going to shoot 52%. Obviously, it's you don't want a team to shoot 52% every game, or you're not going to win many. But they really did make some plays down the stretch on the offensive end with that lineup. I think Tyree Edie had a really, really solid game that we're kind of not talking about, because Vinny had 21 and Cam had 13 in the second half. But he hit a big shot. I think it might have been even a tie game late shot clock, where he kind of hit a step back jumper, and I think that might have been our first lead in that second half. But he really played well, slashing to the basket, some really tough finishes. He can be a key piece going forward for that bench as well.
Yeah, Tyree Edie shooting 48% on the year, just not surprising at all. Even with 1-for-9 from three, which he's actually a pretty decent 3-point shooter, Edie has been, and I'm going to do a piece on this, I think, this week if I can get a chance to talk to Ty. He's been actually one of the more efficient scorers in college basketball as far as shot attempts and you know, true shooting percentage and e-field goal percentage and kind of the more advanced numbers. His stuff really checks out, and specifically from last season, he's a big-time, you know, big-time kid. Ultimately, though, I think that the number one takeaway is just that this was a game they needed to win, and they did. And you mentioned, you know, kind of the seeding when we were talking earlier before the show. You mentioned a loss at home to a team like Cal Poly that was 6-26 a year ago. That makes you a 15 seed, and then that is the last thing that I think Coach Richmond and these guys want if they're going to make a realistic run at that 14-13-12, you know, that 13-12 you saw with, you know, K-State going down last year to a 13 as a 4. People get 12-5 all the time. You know, Coach Richmond's been a part of a 12-5 as an assistant to Saul Phillips. That's where this team needs to go, and getting a win like that today was a big-time deal.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to look at this game at the end of the year, and you're not really going to remember the game, but you're going to see, like you said, the biggest thing is you're going to see a 7-point win. They're not going to probably remember how it was done or anything like that, but if you look back at this game at the end of the year and you see a loss, I mean, that's something that any type of selection committee is going to look at and be like, okay, their RPI is in the 270s. I mean, that it hurts your seed. So it's the difference between potentially keep on winning, getting that 13, 14 seed, potentially 12 to 15 seed or 16 seed, and that's the difference between Duke or an underachieving high major.
Yeah, right, exactly, or an overachieving mid, you know, something that you have the horses to match up with, and you're not, you know, having R.J. Barrett throw lobs to Zion Williamson. All right, man. Nate, I really appreciate the time. One thing Nate and I forgot to mention might have possibly needed to lead the show, and that's that North Dakota State has at least somewhat figured out their point guard situation after Cam Hunter. It's been something that we've been talking about for a while on this show and on Bison Report in general, and that's at North Dakota State is in fantastic shape at the point guard position, but not for very long. Vinny Shaheed, the leader of the squad right now, is a senior. His backup, Cameron Hunter, is a junior. And beyond that, there are really no true point guards on the roster. I think in a pinch, you could have Jarius Cook do some of that work. But ultimately, I think he's a wing and a spot-up shooter and a guy that you want off the ball and not necessarily trying to create for other people. So the Bison went out and got a commitment from a very similar guy, I think, to Vinny Shaheed, frankly. DC3, Donald Carter III, is from the Minneapolis area and is a sophomore at Scottsdale Community College, which means that he will have 3 years to play two. Ultimately, I don't think he's going to take those 3 years. I think he's going to take the two. I would guess that DC3 will come in and back up Cameron Hunter next season and then will probably be the starting point guard the season following that. And by that time, I would hope that Richmond has secured a class of 2021 point guard, a high school point guard that can be there for 4 years, because right now the Bison have a really strong 2020 class with DC3, Grant Nelson, the big man from Devil's Lake, and Bowden Skunberg, the gunner, the guard from Jamestown. So a lot of local talent. But they needed a lead guard, and that's what they found in Donald Carter III. He is listed at 6'2". I'm not sure I buy that. The young man was at the North Dakota State football game and was on his official visit this weekend. I would guess he's probably closer to 6 foot or maybe 6'5", because he was about eye level with me, which is about, you know, that's about where I operate. But a really efficient player in the sense that as a freshman at the JUCO level, he shot 49% from the field, only 24% from three, though. And of his 287 field goal attempts, only 50 of those were from distance. So he's not a tremendous three-point shooter, and it's not something that he does a lot. But he does get to the rim. He gets buckets, and he's an excellent free-throw shooter at a little over 75%. You like to see that. You like to see his ability to rebound the ball. He's 24th in his conference in rebounding. And from a point guard, that's pretty fantastic at about 5.5 boards a game and 5.5 assists a game as well. So he's a distributor. He's a bucket getter. He's a guy that, you know, played 26 minutes a game as a freshman. He's a good player, and I think he's a good transition because North Dakota State right now, it really doesn't look like they're going to pick up a 2020 high school senior point guard, and this bridges the gap yet another year with a guy that I think is pretty rock solid. Having watched some of his tape, I think he's going to be able to kind of work with the younger guns as far as the Jarius Cook, Jackson Notek, Noah Christensen, some of the younger guys that will be, you know, kind of on the come up a year from now and will be sort of the leaders of the program at that time. So DC3, Donald Carter III, is the big get for Bison basketball this weekend, shoring up some of their long-term point guard concerns. And now, from sunny South Carolina, I'm going to bring in our football analyst, Trevor Gebhardt. Trev, how are we living?
We're living large, Ross. And fun fact for you, it was actually warmer on Sunday in South Dakota than it was in Fort Mill. Not the case now, but it was on Sunday.
Oh, yeah, because it's nasty up here now.
Is it snowing?
Yeah, there's snow on the ground. It's not physically falling from the sky right now, but, you know, there's about a half inch on my driveway that I could shovel, but that I'm not going to out of principle because I'm hoping it's going to warm back up. I think the major news coming out of that game against Western Illinois has to be the health of Jabril Cox. I mean, he's the team's best player. Knee ankle is what I was told was held out, you know, from the second half. They're up 27-0. And then today, Coach Ant said that it wasn't anything structural, but that they were going to prepare this week as though Jabril Cox was not going to play. And that's kind of an interesting way to word it. I would, you know, from an NFL perspective, I'd classify him as questionable, trending to doubtful. I think if it was the national semifinal against South Dakota State, he might be playing. But at home as probably a 30 to 40 point favorite against USD, I think there's a chance we might not see Jabril Cox. What are your thoughts, Trev? Obviously, you know, neither of us are staring at the kid's MRI or anything.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I hadn't had a chance to watch Ence's press conference, or, you know, I haven't, of course, seen anything on Twitter, because if it was anything even above a little bit minor, I think that'd be huge news. My gauge on it, based off being in that locker room before, is he's probably got some inflammation. He probably can't run 100%. If he had to play on Saturday, he would find a way to be 100%. So it's better to be precautionary. There's no point in playing him, especially when you need him for the long haul. If they get into a situation where they weren't be able to clinch a share of the Valley, he would 100% play against Southern Illinois the following week. I don't think a major concern, because you'd be able to gauge that from Matt Ence. So just precautionary would be my take as well.
Yeah, he really didn't seem bent out of shape about it. I'm not going to, you know, pretend I can read the head coach's mind or anything like that. I just, my level of personal concern, watching the film, watching the mechanism of the injury, I don't have a long-term concern with Jabril Cox right now. But I think, you know, there's a chance. I think it's a slim chance, but there's a chance that you know, Jackson Brown's a senior, and he maybe deserves a chance to shine. And what the hell, you're going to be highly favored against either South Dakota or Southern Illinois. I think you'll be in a situation where you could kind of tag team that Sam spot between James Kaiser and Jackson, or maybe even use Jasir Cox a little bit. I think you can get through those two games, because if you get through those two games, then he gets a month because he gets the bye as well. But if he's ready to go, he's going to play. I mean, that's the way that Jabril Cox is. That's the type of player that he is. They have an opportunity with these two quote unquote easier games coming up. And I know Southern Illinois has been better, but they're still going to probably get smoked, I would guess, in the season finale, and smoked in a way that Jabril Cox being or not being on the field is not going to be the difference. One kid, though, who is a tremendous difference maker, is one Trey Lance. And Trev, you and I are just flat out running out of things to say. 16 adjusted yards per attempt. That's absurd on Saturday. 17 to 22, 313 yards and two scores. Another ridiculous scramble touchdown, you know, 14 yards a carry, 16 adjusted yards an attempt. The guy is absolutely playing at an elite level. I've now jumped on the bandwagon with you. He's a Walter Payton Award winner. Now, he won't, but so this is what I did on Twitter, and you guys can find it if you like. It's pretty easy. Just Twitter search my handle and Trey's. The top 10 QBs on the Walter Payton Award watch list, Trey Lance leads by AYA by over a full yard. Aaron Winchester has a 10.9 adjusted yards an attempt. Reed Sinnott is at 10.8. Maybe some guys you've heard of would be Eric Berrier at 9.4. Case Cook is at 9.2. 12.2 adjusted yards an attempt for Trey Lance this year. He is leading. I would assume he's leading the country just because I pulled the entire Walter Payton Award watch list, and I would guess that if anybody's having a better season than Trey, he would have at least been on the watch list. But the kid is an absolute slam dunk for the Jerry Rice. I wrote today in my three quick things, it's his award. They just haven't mailed the thing yet. The Walter Payton, though, I don't know if the voters would actually do it, but they should.
If, you know, knock on wood, I don't want to jinx anything here. It's kind of like a perfect game. It's like just kind of let it happen. If Trey Lance goes through the regular season without throwing an interception and leads the Bison to a national championship game appearance, which, of course, the award's given out before the game is actually played, I don't know how you can justify giving it to anybody else. because he's either first or second, if I'm not mistaken, at least before this last week, in pass efficiency in the country, and hasn't thrown an interception. What more do you want from a kid to say he's not the best player in the country? So, obviously a little bit of bias involved that, you know, I wore the green and gold, and it's what we cover and watch every week, but how can you say that someone's not the best player in the country when they touch the ball every play, their team's undefeated, and they haven't thrown a pick all year? That, to me, tells you everything you need to know. And if you had to start a season next year and you had to pick one player in the country to run your squad, every FCS coach in America would pick number five. So,
and half the Power Five coaches in America.
That's the dang truth. And that's a different conversation for another day. but you're absolutely right. So when you look at that, yeah, it's if they don't give it to him, it's because it's a political thing where they said, well, he's already got the Jerry Rice Award. Let's give somebody else some love. I get it. I understand it. It is what it is. But I think you personally, you give credit where credit's due. And number five is the best freshman in the country. That's already his award. And he is the best football player in the country. And he deserves that award. So,
and by the way, I mean, we're just talking about the guy's ability to throw the ball. Can we talk about the fact that he has 666 yards rushing and nine scores? He's having the only back on North Dakota State's roster having a quote-unquote better season than him is Ty Brooks with 675 yards, averaging 7.5 a carry. Trey Lance is averaging 7 yards with nine snacks and 666 yards on the ground. He's having a good season for a tailback. While, by the way, leading the country in efficiency, not throwing a pick, the team's undefeated. He's over 12 freaking yards in attempt when you talk about adjust. I mean, it's I don't get it, man. I mean, you and I both, and yes, all right, fine. We're not neutral. Let's just be real about that. That's fine. I grew up a fan. I have dialed that back in an attempt to offer, you know, reasonable journalism or in an attempt to be a little bit down the middle. But we've seen 16. We've seen the big redhead. We've seen Easton. This is some stuff I have not seen.
Right.
And we're talking about three guys that were in the league. You know, Brock obviously having the shortest stay, but still a minicamp guy and a Canadian Football League guy.
He's got a Grey Cup ring.
Trey Lance, he's the best player in FCS football right now. And unfortunately, he's a freshman, and so that'll go against him. We've got a lot of old voters, you know, that vote on FCS awards that will hold that against Trey. And we've got a lot of voters in the FCS awards that view North Dakota State athletes as part of a system, part of a machine, and not necessarily individual talents, which I think is hilarious. I mean, how do you think they win the games? Guess what? It's the players. And that there's no disrespect to Coach Entz or Chris Kleiman or Craig Bohl. That's not my point. My point is that if you don't think that at some point, and you're basically saying that with the exception of Kyle Emanuel, but if you don't think at some point over the last decade, North Dakota State has had the best player in the country, I can't help you. I mean, it's just absurd, especially this, you know, Jeremiah Briscoe. And I'm going to get down a rabbit hole here of guys that have won the Peyton that just jack around the field 60 times a game. But anyway, I'm glad we, in a game where NDSU dominates in that way, I'm glad we found a good 6 minutes to just rant about something that was helpful long-term for the pod here. I do have to ask you, though, Trevor, about your preseason expectations, and I don't think you or I ever put anything out there publicly about this team privately, and I think maybe even on the radio. I guess I think I had predicted another one loss season, something like the 11 or 12 or 14 team. I don't know what to say. I mean, this team's 10-0. They are darn sure going to be 11-0 after this week, and all likelihood points to an undefeated regular season nationally, and I think even regionally. I know Izzo had the team with three losses. I saw that in his, you know, prediction thing at the beginning. How's this team 10-0? How's this team looking at 12-0? But how's this team 10-0 with a chance to clinch the outright Valley title before the last game of the season has been played?
It reminds me very much of 2011 in a way. Now, I know the program's in a different state. You know, the whole circumstances of a different coaching staff graduating, 24 seniors. So it's very similar to a combination of 2011 and then also my senior year in 2014. Because 2011, we had a very young squad, a lot of freshmen, a lot of sophomores, and then sprinkled in a handful amount of seniors contributing, guys like Warren Holloway, DJ McNorton, et cetera. And it was just a group of guys that found a way to win, and we clicked. And we were the best of friends off the field. And I think you can see that through some of their reactions and interactions through Twitter, social media, and all that, even on the field. That chemistry is apparent. It's not a secret that when things get tough, like in South Dakota State, that you have a galvanized group. And it's not a secret when things are going well, like against Western Illinois this last week, that this group genuinely loves each other. And when you hear it in post-game press conferences, you see it all the time with programs. They all want to talk about culture. They all want to talk about being a part of a brotherhood. But when you talk about it wearing the green and gold and you see it when they're right next to each other, it's true to its genuine core. And that is how this team has won. That is how this program has made its hay. I don't think anybody expected this. I know we didn't. After the Butler game, I think it became more apparent that they were going to be more of a 1-2 loss team throughout the season. You just normally expect that one hiccup throughout the season, kind of a letdown, especially with a young group and a new coaching staff. That happens. Shoot, we had a veteran group in 2014 and a new coaching staff. Excuse me, granted, Coach Kleiman got promoted from D.C. to head ball coach. We had the bad week at Northern Iowa, and it's going to happen. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. And the difference is in 2013 and 2018, the two undefeated seasons, rare in FCS football, those were more predictable. You had a veteran squad in both teams, very much junior, senior heavy snap counts on both sides of the ball and a lot of experience. So you can see those coming. But this one, you just have a very young, extremely talented group of guys that love each other, that play hard, that you can tell want to win more for the guy next to them than themselves. And that is deadly, and that is what has made the program as successful as it is, and that is why I want to do things like this and cover the group, because I know how special it is and I know how rare it is just to see that in society in general. So it's a very lethal thing when you have guys that play out of love and are willing to go to work in the process, and the results you're seeing it. So it's fun to watch, like we've said a million times. And the fact that these guys are so young, I think, is what makes it so impressive for me and you. Because in 2011, 2012, we had those letdowns against Youngstown and Indiana State. And these guys have almost learned from that already without even experience that heartbreak. So hopefully they keep it going. There's not a lot for me to think that that won't happen. But it's really comes down to a lot of talent and a lot of love.
Yeah, and I want to just quick grab onto something that you said there and what I think the kind of scary difference is between this team and your teams. And I don't mean to disrespect your teams by saying this, but you use the phrase found a way to win. This team is not finding a way to win. They're blowing out nationally ranked teams on the road. I mean, they did it to Illinois State. You watched an absolute ass-kicking of UNI. Now, granted, that game was in the Fargo Dome, but that's what's really striking, I think, about this specific group of young men is that, yeah, they're young, and sure, young North Dakota State teams have had success in the past, but they weren't absolutely boat racing everyone. And that's kind of where we're at with this Bison team, which has me really interested in like the future of the program and what people are going to say about, you know, if they don't lose next, you know, this year at all, and they go 29 or 30 and 0 over a 2-year stretch, that voice of they need to move up, they need to move up, they're, you know, this is boring, or, you know, people from on the outside saying they need to move up, or people on the inside saying that this isn't fun anymore. I mean, I don't think people realize just how hard this is, but the Bison are really, really making it look easy. And next year, and it's something I talked about a little bit this weekend, because the week to week, when you're such heavy favorites, it's tough to find discussion points. It's hard even to get your mind to stay in the same place, which is where I'm at right now, is I have a hard time focusing even on this South Dakota team and doing a ton of research on South Dakota when they're going to be 35 point underdogs. It's hard for me to get there. My mind goes to what's the next real challenge, which is Oregon. I mean, the next real challenge is likely James Madison in the championship game, but I mean, I can hear, you know, the just the nails on the chalkboard for guys like Entz and Roll and Braun hearing me talk this way, but it's, I mean, it's legitimate. You look at Weber State barely scraping by UND, a team that NDSU absolutely did not belong on the same field with. You look at South Dakota State as supposedly the fourth best team in the country, lose one to Illinois State, I think at home, frankly. There are two teams in the country this year, as far as I can tell, and that's North Dakota State and James Madison, and they'll duke it out. But I put another thing in, three quick things, which was what next year's offense might look like. And everyone comes back except for Ty Brooks and Ben Ellefson and a right guard. Well, they've had a right guard in Kubis that they've been grooming for 4 years, a guy that barely lost a position battle to Nash Jensen, and a young man that does get rotated in. You know, everybody else is back on the offensive line. All the tailbacks are back. You basically replace Brooks with Jalen Bussey, and you replace Ellefson with some of the best young tight ends in FCS football. You know, this group might score 50 a game next year. And frankly, if I'm Oregon, I'm not concerned. It seems that the rumor of a potential buyout has been put to bed, and that's good, because I think that this game against Oregon next August or September, whichever it is absolutely going to be fascinating.
I think it's going to open up the eyes around the country really fast. It's not a secret. You see, after the Iowa game, all the articles about stop scheduling North Dakota State and Oregon, you're up next, and we'll write the same article in 4 years. And, you know, it would definitely be another, I don't know, stunner, another shocking kind of deal. But at the same time, that locker room is going to firmly believe that they belong in that game, and that they firmly deserve to win. And I know that because I know exactly how we approached Minnesota, Colorado State, Kansas State, Iowa State, and all of those were double-digit wins with the exception of Kansas State, which we were down double digits in the second half. And if you told me that that locker room doesn't believe that they have a chance to win, I will laugh in your face. And I just can't wait to be out in Eugene to watch it. And I know, like you said, the coaches, if they're listening to this, I'm sorry, because you know, this is just kind of our job, and you know, you still have to take care of business this year. So, but either way, like you said, as far as like real challenges, yeah, I mean, as far as on paper, JMU and Frisco, and then Oregon next September.
Yeah, it's wild. Speaking of wild, we found out something kind of cool in the post game press conference, and that Josh Babich, while he was on scout team, was, you know, Jake Wenicke and all of the best receivers for the opposing team. Pretty cool, I think, to see a guy that size just running away from fools down the seam. That was quite the athletic feat. You and I have talked about dudes that maybe just weren't around and weren't out on the roster, and all due respect to Kevin Vodeland and some of the tight end guys that you played with. I don't think you played with anybody quite like Josh Babich.
Yeah, he's a different cat. Excited to see what he can do. Because not much to say. I think I saw it from, I think it was Cole Pack. He made a Klein Saucer reference. And I've, of course, watched that clip on YouTube. I wasn't alive when that play happened. Strikingly similar. And that type of athleticism carried Kleinsasser a long way in his football career. So, yeah, I love those guys dearly, but didn't have any cats like that back in our day.
A guy I really was impressed with on Saturday was Jalen Bussey, mentioned even before, literally in this show. But there was an NDSU staffer last year that told me that Bussey was the fastest kid they had ever seen on film. Football speed, not necessarily maybe track speed, but just the way that he distanced himself from defenders. What an unbelievable start to a career. When you have a 65-yard touchdown on your first touch, and then another absolute bomb on your second touch, 65 to the house, and then 45 to the house. Then he got tackled for a 3-yard loss, which really ruined his chance at the school's all-time yards per carry record. But, you know, he's still at 20.5 yards per touch, so maybe he's got a shot.
So just looking at, I need to pull this back up, but if you're opposing defensive coordinators, and I know people have talked about this with the quarterbacks before, but you have Ty Brooks, you have Trey Lance, you have Demetri Williams and Adam Cofield. Now Kobe Johnson comes into the fold. Now you're thinking, okay, great, here's another one. And then you got a guy like Jalen Bussey that comes along in week 11 and does what he did. I don't know, man. Yeah, he's fast. You can tell he's not going to shy away from contact. Granted, he didn't have a lot. He had that kickoff return too, didn't he? So
he did.
A special cat, and I think, like we've said time and time again with these guys, he's a freshman. I think he probably still has his red shirt in his back pocket, I would assume. I don't know if we can confirm that. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. This was his first appearance. They've been dressing him every week just in case they needed him. But this was his first appearance. And that's something, too, that, you know, if there were ever guys to be jealous of Coach Entz, I could definitely understand that, in the sense that he's sitting up there on the podium and saying, you know, Jalen Bussey's a really good player. You watch him play, he's like, boy, He would be a problem for the FCS. And coach is like, but we want to keep him to 4 games because we want to split up, we want to split up his year and Kobe Johnson's year. We want to get that extra year out of Jalen. I mean, what a unbelievable amount of riches at that, you know, Ty Brooks, Adam Cofield, Kobe Johnson, Demetri Williams, Sabian Clark. You're at your 6th back. And by the way, the guy that I would have assumed would have been the top back on the team, Seth Wilson, didn't even play this year. I mean, just how it's just absurd, frankly, the way that they're able to recruit the position and the way that these kids come in. They must be getting excellent coaching. And frankly, some of these backs, and I get it with Kobe and Jalen because they are undersized. I understand that, why Georgia wasn't there, why Georgia Tech wasn't calling, why Florida, Florida State, USF, UCF, they weren't around. But some kids can just play football, and I think that's where you're kind of at with these tailbacks. A couple other quick things to touch on. I thought it was good to see a lot of the scout team kids get in. We saw Terrell Hall for the first time, who's a guy that's been on the tip of the tongue for Coach Entz and a couple other folks around the program. Josh Hayes specifically mentioned Terrell Hall as somebody to watch moving forward. So he's got 3 games left if they want to use him. So, you know, potentially in the regular season, maybe if things get a little thin, but he's a corner that they really, really like. But it was just great to see, you know, I haven't had a chance to look at participation, but I bet you upwards of 75 kids got in the game on Saturday just because things were out of hand so early. Really cool to see the Mostart twins. Those guys have been absolutely destroying it on the scout team week in and week out, and to see one guy get a strip sack and to see the other brother corral the fumble was pretty darn cool. Speaking of pretty darn cool, Trev, I want you to kind of wax poetic here and go into the Wayback Machine. I'd like to talk to you a little bit about Senior Week, because that's what this is for these 14 young men. Not the biggest group in the world, but some really important players to this program. Some of the things that have been accomplished: Dimitri Williams, Ty Brooks, Cole Karch, Derek Tuska, Jack Darnell. The list goes on and on of guys that have really left their stamp on the program. And even a guy like Jimmy Kapuras, who has really only been able to contribute the 1 year, I think it's been a, you know, kind of a big deal. I think that Jimmy's addition to the team this year and giving Trey a reliable slot guy after Darius Shepherd's graduation is a big deal, and something that should not be overlooked just because, you know, he wasn't in Fargo for 5 years. But bring us back. You don't have to, you know, tell us what you said during your senior speech and things like that, but bring us back to kind of your senior week and your speech and some of the things that happened while you guys were kind of
situation that we were in 14, and even the few years prior to that, you know that you have more games in the Fargo Dome remaining. So that kind of helps put a curb to as far as some of the emotions of, hey, this could be my last game in the Fargo Dome. You start to reflect back on the previous 3 to 4 years, whether you redshirt or not, and really how fast it goes. Being able to get in front of the team and have the floor to yourself is pretty cool. I don't know many programs that actually do that. Some speeches are better than others. I got a lot of funny stories about guys getting up there and talking. But, yeah, it's just, you know, shoot, I don't even remember who we played in my senior year. I think it was Youngstown maybe. And you really start to think back of everything you've gone through, how tough it was. It's not easy. That program's not for everybody. And the fact that you made it through is – that alone is impressive. And then you start thinking about the wins, some of the championships. And I know a lot of the recent players got new experience that, but not everybody has. But any guy that can go through that program for 4 years, 5 years, and finish out their collegiate career at North Dakota State, I'll tip my cap to them every day, because I know what they've been through. I know what that program requires for us to win there. And it's, you know, it's pretty cool. And then you get around on a tunnel by yourself. That's pretty special. Basically, everyone in that stadium is cheering for you. And then you just go and take care of business. And you put the cherry on top with a win. And you move on to the playoffs. So I think, you know, as far as in recent history, it's not as significant as if it's a non-playoff year and that sort of thing. I don't think we'll see that anytime soon, but just knowing that you kind of have the floor to yourself and you're getting honored for the efforts that you've put in, it's pretty nice and it's pretty cool that we have a program and a coaching staff that allows for that, because you don't see that everywhere.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, and that is something that I brought up. You go back to last year, and I know for sure Darius Shepherd was part of our Bison Report program, you know, the podcast for Senior Week. And it's certainly an aspect that is important. The fact that these guys know, hey, we probably have three more games at the Dome and we are not running out of that tunnel for the last time. But the spotlight and having the crowd recognize your contributions to the program and getting to, you know, shake the hand of the head coach, I would have to imagine that that is a time that very few that make it all the way through the program forget, no question. Trev, I want to thank you for your time. Certainly want to thank Nate for his as well. Listeners, want to thank you if you've made it this far. We certainly appreciate you sticking around for the whole podcast. Guys, the best way to support Trevor and I in this venture is to become a Bison Report VIP member. We've got some swag for you guys. The next couple of signups, I've still got some of the stocking caps. Trevor hasn't even gotten his yet, but I've still got some of the stocking caps that you've seen on Twitter that have the Bison Report and the 24/7 logo on them. We'd love to give one away to a new VIP member, but we're offering some really good specials on VIP membership. And once your promotion is over and you're paying the annual or the monthly rate, we're also going to throw in the commercial free version of CBS All Access, which is a $100 annual value on top of that. Really, really top to bottom, an excellent product that we're trying to put out. I think you guys have noticed the expansion of the video program and really the expansion of everything that we're doing ever since, the new team took over, and we're having a lot of fun doing this. Hopefully you guys are having a lot of fun receiving it. Guys, thanks for listening one more time, and go Bison.